Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we are cracking what feels like a foundational code in mathematics fractions. It's this concept that, well, it looks simple, but yeah, it often serves as a major barrier for learners, doesn't it?
It really does.
You've brought us some great source material, though. A clear, concise guide. It really pushes us to go back to the very start and build this knowledge block by block.
Yeah, and our mission today is really to synthesize these core elements. We're focusing only on the absolute essentials, you know, defining the fraction, understanding what its two key parts actually do, classifying the basic types, and then, crucially, mastering the idea of equivalence. It's about grasping the language of division, really.
The language of division. I like that.
Because the word fraction itself, it comes from the Latin fractio, which literally means to break.
Okay, to break. And we start with maybe the most intuitive way to break something, sharing food.
Always a good start.
So imagine you have a single perfect round roti. You fold it exactly in half, perfectly down the middle, to share it equally. In that moment, you've just done your first perfect mathematical division. You've created two fractions.
That visual is everything, isn't it? A fraction, at its core, is a part of a whole. But the single most critical principle, the one that underpins all of this, is that the whole must be divided into equal parts. That's non-negotiable. If your piece is bigger than the other person's, mathematically speaking, you haven't actually made halves.
Right. Okay. That makes sense. So let's get a bit abstract then. If we see $12.02 written down, you know, the number on top, the line, the number below, what is the functional job of each of those numbers? What are they telling us?
Okay. The structure is absolute.
Right.
And understanding the function of each number is like the main takeaway here.
Right.
The number on the bottom. That defines the whole environment, you could say.
Okay.
It tells us the total number of equal parts, the whole thing, the object, the collection, whatever it is, has been split into. This number dictates the size of every single piece.
Okay. It sets the size and the number on top.
That's just the count. Simple as that. It tells us how many of those defined equal parts we're actually interested in or counting or maybe have eaten.
Got it. So let's use that dosa example from the material you shared.
Perfect.
Vikram cuts a dosa into four equal pieces. So four total pieces. That's the bottom number.
Exactly. That's the bottom number, the four. It defines the size of the piece we're dealing with, fourths.
Fourths. Okay. And he eats one piece.
So that one is the top number. He ate $49.04, one-fourth of the dosa.
Okay. That seems pretty clear. And I think what's really compelling here, or was for me, is realizing this logic applies not just to single things like a roti or a dosa, but it works perfectly for collections or groups of things, too.
Absolutely. And this is where the names for these parts become really functionally critical.
Right, the official terms.
We call the number on the bottom the denominator. And it doesn't just tell you the total count. It actually defines the denomination like, the name or the size of the fractional part.
Ah, denomination, like currency denominations.
Sort of. If the denominator is 8, the parts are called eighths. If it's 3, they're thirds. It names the family of the fraction, if you will.
Okay, denominator names the size or family. And the top number.
That's the numerator. And that number simply numerates, it counts. It's the number of those parts, those named parts that we're actually focusing on.
Numerator counts, denominator names the size. Got it. Let's look at the Ladouce example.
Yeah, good one.
You have a box. It contains 5 Ladouces in total. That 5 is...
That's your denominator. D equals 5. It means we're dealing with fifths of the box's content.
Okay, fifths. And if 3 of those Ladouces are moutacour...
Then 3 is your numerator. N equals 3. The fraction representing the moutacour Ladouces is $3.50. You're counting 3 specific pieces out of the total 5 pieces.
It's always parts out of a total. Or the cricket analogy, that works too. An over has 6 balls.
6 balls.
Yeah.
So the denominator is 6. We're talking 6ths of an over.
Right. And if 2 of those balls are dot balls, no runs scored.
Then 2 is the numerator. The fraction of dot balls is 216.76. See, we're always defining the size of the piece, first the denominator, and then counting how many of those pieces we have or are interested in the numerator.
That clarifies it really well.
And, you know, this leads to a neat little foundational nugget of knowledge.
Yeah.
Even a whole number, like say 7, can be written in this structure.
How?
You just give it the denominator of 1, so $701.
Ah.
You're basically saying you have 7 parts, and the size of each part is 1 whole.
7 holes. Okay, that makes sense too. So once we've really nailed this core relationship, this numerator-denominator thing, the sources immediately start classifying them, putting them into groups.
Exactly. It helps organize things. Just like with anything new, it gives it the language for comparing them later on.
And the basic types we're looking at here are unit fractions, like fractions, and unlike fractions.
Yep, those three. Starting with the simplest, maybe, the unit fraction.
Okay.
A unit fraction is super easy to spot. It's defined by always having a numerator of one.
Always a one on top.
Always a one. So it represents just one single piece of whatever the whole was divided into. It could be $12 ton or $1,700, $1,100. Doesn't matter. One piece.
One unit of the whole. Okay. Then we get into families. The source called them families.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. Like fractions, these are defined because they share the same denominator.
Ah, the bottom number is the same.
Exactly. Which means the size of the piece is identical for all of them. The examples given were $29, $59, $89 tunnel. They're all ninths. They're like friends from the same family, as the source said.
Because their denominator, their family name, is nine.
Precisely. And conversely, unlike fractions are just, well, fractions with different denominators.
Different bottom numbers.
Different bottom numbers, which means the size of the pieces is fundamentally different. Like 13t3, 2n5i tunnels, 3n80p1s. The pieces are thirds, fifths, eighths, different sizes altogether.
Okay, so why do we care so much about this grouping, like versus unlike? Why does it actually matter?
Well, it matters a lot because it sets the stage for comparing them and later on for doing things like adding or subtracting them.
Right.
Think about it. If fractions are, like if they have the same denominator, comparing them is incredibly easy, almost trivial.
Because the piece size is the same.
Exactly. The source points out, if you have 588 8 of a pizza and I have 308 8 of the same pizza,
you'll have more.
Obviously, right. Yeah. The piece size, eighths, is fixed. You just have more of those pieces, five instead of three. So the fraction with the bigger numerator is automatically the bigger fraction if there are like fractions.
Okay, so comparing like fractions is easy, which means the big challenge comes when we face two unlike fractions.
That's it.
If we want to compare them or maybe add them later, we need a way to somehow make them like fractions first.
You've hit it, exactly. And that brings us perfectly to the next big idea, equivalence.
Equivalent fractions.
Yep. Equivalence is like the superpower of fractions. It's this really powerful idea that two fractions can look completely different on paper.
Different numerators, different denominators.
Totally different numbers. But they actually represent the exact same quantity or value.
This is one of those concepts that can feel a bit surprising, maybe, when you first see it, that $12 and $200 for $32 are actually the same amount seems almost like a magic trick.
It does feel like that sometimes, but it's not magic, it's just geometry, really.
Geometry?
Yeah, think about those visual examples from the material. Remember the paper folding?
Vaguely.
Take a strip of paper, you fold it in half, you color one half. That's $12, $2, right?
Right.
Now take an identical strip, fold it in half, then fold it in half again. You've got four equal parts now.
Right, fourths.
Color two of those parts, that's $204, $2. Now hold the strips side by side, the shaded area. It's identical.
Yeah.
$12.02 covers the same space as $24.02.
Ah, I see. The visual makes it clear.
Or the Doklo tray example. You cut a tray into three long equal pieces. One piece is $13 and $23.
Okay.
Now take that same tray and just cut each of those long pieces in half across the middle. How many pieces do you have now?
Six.
Six smaller equal pieces. And that original 13 to 03 pieces is now made up of two of these smaller pieces, right?
Yeah, two out of the six. $266.
Exactly. So right. 13 artillery doors is the same amount of dokla as 266 hours.
Yeah.
The amount of food didn't change, just how many slices it's cut into. That's equivalence.
Okay. The value is the same. The amount is the same, even if the numbers look different. So what's the actual rule? How do we find these equivalent forms mathematically?
The rule is actually quite elegant, quite simple.
Yeah.
You can generate an equivalent fraction by multiplying or dividing both the numerator and the denominator by the exact same number. Critically, not zero, but any other number.
Multiply top and bottom by the same thing, or divide top and bottom by the same thing.
That's it. So if you take $13.03, like our dokla,
yeah,
and you multiply both the top one and the bottom three by, say, four, what do you get?
$1 a times for sure is four. $3 times four is 12. So $420.02.
Right. $422 is equivalent to $13.02. You change them. You went from thirds to twelfths, and you change the count from one to four. But the underlying value, the actual amount, is exactly the same.
Wow. Okay. That's the method for finding them. But what if someone just gives us two fractions? Say, the example in the source was $802.05 outs and $102.05.
Right.
And we just need a quick way to check. Are these two equivalent? Do they represent the same amount?
Okay. For just checking, there's a fantastic shortcut. It's called the crisscross method.
Crisscross. Okay. How does that work?
It's brilliant for just validating equivalence. You take the two fractions side by side, You multiply the numerator of the first fraction by the denominator of the second.
Okay, top of the first times bottom of the second.
Yeah, and then you do the opposite. Multiply the denominator of the first fraction by the numerator of the second.
Bottom of the first times top of the second. Okay, got two products, then what?
If those two products, those two results, are equal, then the original fractions are equivalent. If the products are not equal, the fractions are not equivalent. Simple as that.
Okay, let's try it with $820 and $125.5. First part is numerator of the first, 8 times denominator of the second, 25. 8 times 25, $5. That's 200.
Correct, 200. Now the other way. Denominator of the first, 20 times numerator of the second, 10.
20 times 10, that's also 200. Exactly. Since $200 is $200, the method tells us that yes, $802.5 and $102.5 are indeed equivalent fractions. They look different, but they hold the same value.
That's a neat trick.
It is. Now compare that quickly to, say, checking 203 threes and $78 and $78. Are they equivalent?
Okay, crisscross. $2 times 88 is 16, and $3 times 77 is 21.
Right. Is 16 equal to 21?
Nope, definitely not.
So 203 threes and $78 are not equivalent fractions. The crisscross check gives you that certainty almost instantly.
That's really useful. Okay, this feels like a really solid foundational synthesis then. We've covered the basic language parts and totals.
Right, the names and jobs. Numerator setting the count, denominator setting the size or type of part.
Then the categories we use to group them. Unit, like,
based on their structure, yeah.
And finally, this really powerful idea of equivalence, how fractions can look different but be the same amount, and how to find them or check for them.
Exactly. We built the base layer.
So to sort of solidify why this whole concept of equivalence is so important, the real payoff, maybe, let's revisit that central question the material raised. Can two fractions be unlike, meaning different denominators, but still represent the same amount?
And based on everything we've just discussed, what's the answer?
It has to be yes, right? Because unlike, Panuta just describes how they look different denominators. But equivalence is about the value.
Precisely. That's the realization that unlocks so much of what comes next with fractions. Unlike Panuta describes appearance, equivalence describes value. They aren't mutually exclusive.
So let's use that pizza challenge from the end of the source material to really nail this down.
Good idea.
Rhea says she ate 300 fourth orders of a pizza. Kabir says he ate $16.08 of the same size pizza. Now, 300 and 68.08, they look different.
Different denominators, 4 and 8, so they are definitely unlike fractions.
But who ate more? Or did they eat the same? We used the check.
Use the crisscross method we just learned.
Okay. $3 times 88 is $24.
And $4 times 66 is...
also 24.
Bingo. $24 equals $204. So even though the fractions 340 or 3 orders are unlike, they are equivalent, Rhea and Kabir ate the exact same quantity of pizza.
That moment when you realize fractions aren't just defined by how they look, but by this constant ratio or relationship between the numerator and the denominator.
Yeah.
That feels like the key. The whole field just opens up.
It really does. Keep focusing on that relationship, that underlying value represented by the ratio, and you've truly mastered the core foundation of fractions.
Excellent. Well, keep practicing those foundational rules, everyone, and you'll find fractions are maybe just fancy ways of talking about sharing.
That's a good way to think about it. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.